This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
To see 8 going in the second period, that was chaotic. It's a damn circus out there. But definitely no refunds after that one. That was, take your coach's hat off. It was one hell of an entertaining second period.
You know, when you're in a tight series or when you need to win a game to get back into a series, there are some things you just can't control. Goaltending is one of them. Injuries are another. But one thing you can control for the most part is discipline. And, you know, we know officiating in the NHL playoffs, to put it kindly, is inconsistent. But if you make it obvious and are undisciplined, that's on you. And if the Canes lose this series, I think, Dave, they can look back on a couple of things. First, it will be goaltending. You've got to go find a number one guy. Second would be in the second period of Game 4, leading 4-2, you take a couple of penalties, and then you find yourself down 5-4. The margin of error is small, but that's the difference in the playoffs, and that's been the difference in the series. It may seem small, and I think it is, but you can almost say it's what has separated these two teams so far through 4 games, with the Lightning having an opportunity to close things out tomorrow night. But it occurred to me, Dave, after Saturday afternoon, outside of what the Lightning were able to do, which was pretty special, and we're going to talk about it for the next hour, is that, and John Cooper has alluded to this, the further you get into the playoffs, the better the teams are. So the margin of error is smaller. But boy, those errors that you make are magnified. The Canes have made more of them, but I do think a couple of deficiencies have stood out so far. Goaltending, for sure. Maybe not to the extent that the special teams have played, but for sure, I think goaltending has been a question mark, and we're going to talk about it. Who is Carolina going to start on Tuesday, or maybe who should they start? But also to special teams, and I don't think Carolina did themselves any favor in Game 4 being undisciplined at a time when they needed to be disciplined. And the Lightning have shown over and over again in this series, especially with Kucherov healthy, that if you go to the sin bin, you are going to pay dearly. And honestly, Carolina doesn't have anybody to blame but themselves, particularly with what happened, Dave, on Saturday.
So you bring up some good points, Greg. First of all, your overall point that the margin in the series has been narrow or small is absolutely 100%. I mean, either team could make a really good claim that they could have won each of the first 4 games or lost each of the first 4 games. That's how close it has been. So there has been a slight difference in each of the games, but the games have been, certainly games 3 and 4 were way different than games 1 and 2. And I think we talked about how game 1 was a little different than game 2 as well, but those were much more defensive minded. Game 3 was more wide open. Game 4 had something of everything. And I was just talking to you before the show, like, isn't it almost eerie how this series has mirrored the Lightning Panther series in so many ways? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first 2 games in this series were tight defensive games. That was not the case in game 1 of the Lightning Panther series, the 5-4 Lightning win. But in both, the Lightning won the first 2 on the road. They lose game 3 in overtime. But not only do they lose game 3 in overtime, they carry a power play into overtime in both. They got power play goals in both game 3s from Point and Killorn. So they scored in the game that they lost, game 3 in both series, they scored 2 power play goals from the same guys and had another power play that they carried into overtime on which they did not score. And then they end up losing game 3 in overtime, and game 4, at least in the Florida series up until that point and after the series as well, I think you would say it was the wildest game in the series and probably the most controversial in terms of the officiating. And I think the same is true in this series, that this has been the wildest game. I don't think the Lightning, after the first couple of minutes, had a huge beef with the officiating, but the Hurricanes certainly did after the game, and Kelly Sutherland ends up working both game 4s. So here's where we want the script to deviate, right? We don't want the Lightning to lose game five on the road like they did in the Florida series. And I guess we can revisit this afterward. But isn't it weird how these two series, and Carolina had a different series, obviously, in the first round against Nashville than this one. But it really is strange, the similarities. So anyway, I don't know that that's either here nor there, but it's definitely weird, I would say. And how the series has shifted, too. Like, from games that were really tightly defended, and we talked about the team defenses are flexing their muscle, and the dynamic offenses can't get going, and we've seen a reversal in the last two games, but game four had a little of everything, because the Lightning had their worst defensive stretch in the series, but they also had one of their best defensive periods in the series, game three, or I'm sorry, the third period of game four, where they just locked it down on Carolina. So I don't know if you want to, do you want to get into the kind of the nuts and bolts of game four?
Lead us. Let's go wherever you want to go, and then we'll go from there.
All right. So broad strokes. The Carolina Hurricanes had the best 14 minutes of either team in the series to date, the first 14 minutes of the second period of game four. That was the Carolina Hurricanes when they are at their best. They are forechecking ferociously. They are not letting the team make a play, the other team make a play to get out of trouble. They are swarming you. They are turning that possession advantage into lots of dangerous chances. And for the first time in the series, they were able to translate some possession time, and they had more possession time in the first 14 minutes of the second period on Saturday afternoon. But they were able to translate that into some really dangerous looks and some goals. Think about this. The Carolina Hurricanes, outside of that 14-minute span, it was actually less than that, but I'm saying 14 minutes because that's the point where Bean took his penalty on Barkley Goodrow, which opened the door for the Lightning to get back in the game. And I'm also including the Stamkos power play goal that tied the game at two in that 14-minute span, but that was almost like a blip. And then as soon as the puck was dropped, Carolina just picked up right where they had left off beforehand. So you think about it, Greg, in that 14-minute span, the Hurricanes scored four goals. For the entirety of the rest of the series, they've scored five. That's how dangerous they were in that 14-minute span. And I don't think the Lightning have had a stretch like that either, where they have just completely taken over a game. Now, we can talk about Vasilevsky. I don't think the Slavin goal is a goal he normally allows. I know afterward you and Chief were talking about that, and Slavin shot it at his head, and maybe Vassy had to flinch a little bit.
Yeah, I thought it was a stop that was rather soft for Vassy. Chief, yeah. I think, kind of disagreed a little bit, but that's fine.
Look, if a puck's coming to your head, you are probably going to flinch, but Vassy has made a lot of saves off his mask.
But Dave, that's why you have a helmet.
All right, yeah. All right, like right, he's used to seeing pucks come at him.
Yes.
That was really the first goal that he has allowed, the only goal he has allowed in the series that I think is on him, to be perfectly honest.
I agree with you on that, 100%.
The other three that they scored, two were prime scoring areas. And the other is a great shot from Hamilton into the upper corner through an enormous screen. I mean, there's no way, like we talked in game two, how well Vasilevsky was tracking pucks. I don't think there's any way he could have found that puck. And there was that much traffic in front of him. And Hamilton put it in a perfect spot. So I think you need to tip your cap to the other team there. That one is not on the goalie. Unlike, let's say, the Nedeljkovic play on the Killorn goal in game two, which was a tough save, one that he was screened on, but he had two guys in front of him, and they were up by the hash marks. Watch a replay of that Hamilton goal and count the number of bodies between Hamilton and Vasilevsky. And see how Vasi was going to try and pick that puck up. Very, very difficult to do. So I think that the four goals that Carolina scored, they earned. Probably one of those is on Vasilevsky, but the rest were on the Lightning. Outside of that 14-minute span, though, what have we got? 46 other minutes? If you take out that 14-minute span, I do not think that this was a particularly impactful game for the Carolina Hurricanes. So their 14 minutes were exceptional. Exceptional. As good as we've seen any team play in the series. But they were far from exceptional in the other 46 minutes. They didn't have a great first period, Carolina. I mean, the Lightning had a 1-0 lead. It could have been 3 or 4-0. For all this talk about Carolina's goaltending being an issue, and I don't know if they're going to switch goalies again for Game 5, but Peter Mrazek was pretty darn good in that first period to deny scoring chances. The Lightning outshot the Hurricanes 12-7. I'm hard-pressed to remember any of the shots that Carolina had that were really dangerous. And then in the third period, the Lightning did lock it down. Carolina had nothing going until they pulled the goalie. They had two shots on net in the first 17 minutes of the third period. Now, some of that was the Lightning got the lead back, and they took it into the third period, and they did lock it down. And then you have the final 6 minutes of the second period, and that's your ball game right there. Like, that's where the game was lost for Carolina. And we can get into that. But look, I think if you're up 4-2 on the road and you've played as well as you played for 14 minutes, you should expect to win.
I wanted to address that.
I think that that's fair on Carolina's part. But to say that the Hurricanes dominated game four would be ignoring the other 46 minutes.
No, you're right about that.
Now, maybe they played so well in those 14 minutes that that was enough. Like, that should have been enough for them to win the game. But I don't think that was like 60 minutes of domination.
No.
I thought it was a portion of one period that allowed them to finally break through and take control of the game. But they still lost it, and we can get into why.
Yes, we will get into that.
I want to give you a chance to
No, I think you made a great point. And I was just going to say, I think when we talk about the margins being so slim, to your point, you always hear the talk, and Dave, you and I have had discussions about this. And if our audience wants to react to it, they can at Bolts Radio. I don't believe in playing a solid 60 minutes. I just think physically it's basically impossible. I think even if you're a team that is the clear underdog, you are going to make a push in a game. The Buffalo Sabres will make a push in a game against the best team in the league. That doesn't mean they're going to win. But for Carolina, those 15 minutes or 14 minutes in the second period, Dave, allowed them to get a 4-2 lead. They clearly weren't dominating. And I wasn't asking them, and I don't think you were either, to dominate the rest of the way. But what you needed to do was not implode. And whether that's your goaltender having to come up with some really big saves in the third period, or whether it's defensively tighten some things up and not allowing Tampa Bay to have the chances throughout, or just not being terrible and being disciplined. If you're Rod Brind'Amour, you're going to look back at game four and you're going to say to yourself, we might not have played our best. When we did, it got us a 2-goal lead, and we needed to find a way to come out of Amalie Arena with a win. And if we end up losing this series, we're going to look at a number of things, but I think you're going to circle the last 5 minutes of the second period and say, guys, this is where we lost our minds. And I'm not sure you can blame anybody but Carolina for that. You gave Tampa Bay, Dave, a lifeline, and boy, did they take it.
So we'll get into the penalties here, because I know that that's a sore subject on the Carolina side. Maybe not so much, although maybe it is, the number of power plays the Lightning have, but I think Carolina kind of... sensing which way the wind is blowing, they felt that there should have been more penalties called on the Lightning. I'm gonna get to that in a second. But let's get to the Lightning power play for a second. We had said at the start of the series, coming out of the round one series, a series in which Carolina killed 23 of 26 Nashville power plays through six games, that if Carolina was going to put itself short an average of 26 times over six games, so a little more than four a game, that was going to be tough for them to replicate killing 23 of 26 against this Lightning power play. As good as the Carolina penalty kill has been all year, what were they, number three in the league during the regular season?
Yeah.
Among the league leaders in shorthanded goals scored. Very aggressive. So the first couple of games, the Lightning's power play struggled. Points scored in game one, but I believe that was the only shot the Lightning had on, what was it, three power play chances. And they did not score a power play goal in game two. And they had struggled having the puck with any kind of fluidity in the offensive zone. When the Canes got it out, the Lightning had trouble getting it back in. But games three and four, that dynamic changed. And certainly in game three, the Lightning were very dangerous on the power play. And unlike the game three power play they took into overtime against the Panthers, where they didn't generate as much, they definitely had chances to score in game three on that late power play. They could have gone 3-for-3 on the power play in game number three and could have won that game. Mrazek made a couple of great saves to keep the Lightning off the board in that last power play chance. Game four was a little bit different. So the Lightning had six power plays, and the first three, they went 0-for-3. Of the first three, the first one was their best one. They had a couple of shots on net. Point just missed on a rebound. They had some zone time. The second one was more quiet, and the third one was poor. The third one at the beginning of the second period helped fuel Carolina's momentum when the Canes took over the game. And I'm going to get to the three that the Lightning scored on. But one reason why that third power play, was such a momentum swinger. The Hurricanes came out committed to executing well, I thought, at the start of the second. And even before they got that penalty kill, they were starting to tilt the ice. So Aho, Svechnikov, and Teravainen had a shift. It was about a minute in the offensive zone against Point, Kucherov, and Palat. And Svechnikov takes the penalty. He trips Braden Point behind the Lightning net when Point had finally gotten the puck. But that was at the end of an extremely difficult shift for the Lightning. So you go on the power play if you're the Lightning, but Point's gassed. Kucherov's gassed. And Palat, who's now in the second unit, is also gassed. So you can't start your first unit. And on your second unit, you don't have Palat. So the Lightning started a second unit subbing Maroon for Palat. And Carolina dominated that penalty kill. There was one shot through the 2 minutes. It was Aho who had a shorthanded bid. The Lightning had nothing going. Eventually, they did get the first unit out there for like the last 45 seconds, but the unit couldn't do anything. It was almost like it started on the wrong foot, and the Lightning never got going. And Carolina, you could just feel that, like we talked about the volcano erupting, right, with Carolina, and it erupted. Like they caught a massive tailwind in the second period. They earned it. I mean, they steered their boat in a direction where they could use that wind, and they took off. And they scored in the shift after the penalty ended. Svechnikov came out of the box, stayed on the ice. Lightning didn't execute particularly well in their own zone. Teravainen scores. And we often talk about the goal after, or the shift after a goal is scored. Carolina twice in the second period scored on the shift after a goal had been scored. They did it after Teravainen scored. And Jesper Foss made it 2-1 39 seconds later. And Hamilton's goal to make it 3-2 came in the shift after the Stamkos power play goal. So the first three power plays were not impactful for the Lightning, and the third one downright gave momentum or helped fuel the other team's attack. But then you get to the final three, and the Lightning made a couple of adjustments on the power play. Now, on the goal, so I'm including the Stamkos goal in there. On the Stamkos goal, the one that tied the game at two, Kucherov gets the puck into the offensive zone and kind of, he lost it, but he forced it into the corner. And two Carolina penalty killers came at him and trying to get the puck. And that's their style. That's what they do. They swarm the puck carrier, or they want to get loose pucks and try and get them out. But as we said, it can be a little bit high risk, high reward. And usually it's high reward for Carolina, as evidenced by their penalty kill percentage. But Kucherov, who had 3 points, did not have a point on this particular goal, but he made the play because he got to the puck first and slipped it to Stamkos. And Stamkos smartly just got it to the front of the net. Now Carolina is hustling back into position, but they never really got set. Point takes a shot, and if you're going to fault Mrazek on some of these goals, he had no chance on the goal that was scored here by Stamkos, but he did have a chance to not allow a rebound. Point kind of fluttered it to the net, and Mrazek bobbled the puck, and he allowed a rebound. And Killorn put the first rebound off the crossbar, and then Stamkos scored on the second one. So the key to breaking down the Carolina penalty kill is quick puck movement. But it's way easier said than done. But in that play, Kucherov did it. And the Lightning got the Carolina penalty killers chasing around. What happened on the goal to make it 4-3 and then the goal to make it 5-4, the other two power play goals for the Lightning, Anthony Cirelli came out to start the power play by taking a faceoff against Jordan Staal. And he put Staal on his weak side. Now, that shouldn't affect Jordan Staal too much. I mean, he's over 60% in the playoffs. He's a top faceoff guy. But Cirelli had his number in that particular situation in game four. Cirelli went 4-for-4 on power play faceoffs. And the two faceoffs that he won near the end of the second period led directly to goals. Kucherov scored whatever it was, some 20 seconds after Cirelli won the faceoff, where he shot it from the circle and Cirelli was screening Mrazek, and that went in the top of the net. That made it 4-3. And that really ended Carolina's momentum because the Canes didn't have pushback after Kucherov made it 4-3. Instead, the Lightning grabbed momentum. And then Cirelli won another faceoff on the penalty late in the period. And that was a play where the puck never left the zone. But if you watch the replay, Cirelli makes a pass to Kucherov that is off target. He's behind the net. Kucherov is kind of in the corner. The puck went behind Kucherov. So it's sliding back toward the blue line. And now it's a skate race to the puck. And Jordan Staal, who's got good instincts and an incredibly long reach, pursues the puck. He's probably thinking, I can get this. Either I can get it out, or because Brock McGinn sees what's happening, Brock McGinn is also leaving the zone, thinking, I'm going to leave the zone here. We're going to get a shorthanded bid. Or at the very least, we're going to pressure up ice. But Victor Hedman, kind of like the Kucherov play on the Stamkos first power play goal, Hedman does not get a point out of this, but he makes the play. He got to the puck first, but he didn't like stop it and hold on to it because Staal is coming. Hedman uses one hand on his stick to reach. Hedman's got long reach too, right? And he one times the puck back to the corner. Now Staal and McGinn are out of position. Their aggressiveness backfired. They took a gamble and it blew up in their face. Because now it's a 3-on-2 down low, and we know what happens. Like we see the goal, right? Like what a beautiful goal. Cirelli to Kucherov to Stamkos, open net. Mrazek has no chance. The play was made because Jordan Staal went for it. And when he didn't get the puck and Hedman got it down low, now you're working Carolina's aggressive penalty kill against the Hurricanes. And when the Lightning have had success in games 3 and 4 in the power play, that's exactly what's happened. That's why this penalty kill is high risk, high reward. And unfortunately, this is the way they play. I mean, they're not going to change their penalty kill at this point. Although maybe they're going to be a little bit more cautious in trying to chase pucks when it maybe isn't prudent to do so, but they're still going to be aggressive. But their aggressiveness worked against them on all these power play goals that the Lightning have scored in games 3 and 4. So I thought that was a big shift from games 1 and 2 to games 3 and 4, and why the Lightning, what have they scored now? 6 power play goals in the series. Remember, Carolina allowed a total of 3 power play goals in round 1 against Nashville when they were shorthanded 26 times. And I think you pointed out, Greg, 2 of those goals were 5-on-3s for Nashville.
Right.
The Lightning have popped in 6 power play goals in 4 games. And they have absolutely killed the Hurricanes. I know Hurricanes won game 3. But they killed the Hurricanes on the special teams, power play, Lightning, penalty kill, Hurricanes in game 3. And it won the Lightning the game, essentially, in game 4. Huge, huge swing. So that was the power play versus the penalty kill. We can get into the penalties and were they warranted or anything like that. But that's kind of how I saw it, where the Lightning now are making plays. Like Cooch was asked, I think, after game four, like, kind of, what are you doing on the power play? I was actually, what did you do differently on the power plays that scored as opposed to ones that didn't? And he did say, we didn't make any adjustments. We just executed better. And he's right. The Lightning have to move the puck quickly, and if they can do it, and Carolina's going to be that aggressive, guys are going to be open.
And they've solved that. I mean, that's been the difference. I mean, all we heard about early on in this series was how aggressive Carolina's penalty kill was and how that may give Tampa Bay some issues. But the Lightning's power play has been elite, and one of the reasons they've been elite, for the reasons you gave, Dave, too, but just having Nikita Kucherov being present and on the ice has just made a world of difference. And I know you don't sometimes like these broad questions, but it's something just to get our audience involved in a little bit. And we asked them a couple of different questions pertaining to this game and maybe what to expect moving forward. But, you know, we asked, are the Lightning going to finish off the Canes Tuesday? Obviously, it's we don't know. Who does Carolina start in net? We want people's feedback. Who would they go with? But just in general, Kucherov, is he the best offensive player in the game right now? Now, I know a lot of people will look at Connor McDavid, and I understand that. But I think when you take a look at what Kuch did, not playing in the regular season and the numbers he's putting up in the postseason right now, I do think it speaks to an ability that maybe even those who are very prone to Nikita Kucherov have to take a step back and say, my goodness, this is pretty impressive what he's doing during the most intense time of the year. And that Carolina just doesn't have an answer for it. And this is where we can get into the lack of discipline hurting this
yes.
team and why it's such a big deal. So I'm not suggesting the coaching staff for Carolina or the players are upset about the officiating.
I think they were.
And that's fine.
I think they were pretty
upset.
And they
can. But at least in terms of the penalties that led to goals in that second period, I'm not sure you have a beef. Because maybe they do. As you mentioned, Martin Hook, you know, a 10-51 was basically an elbow to the head, right? I mean, it's, you know, that's something
that's
pretty obvious.
Well, look, they were shorthanded six times. And
which is a lot, by the way.
It is a
lot. I mean, that's a lot in the playoffs.
In two periods.
Yeah, I mean.
They were not shorthanded in the third period.
But when you
Phil and I try and see these things through clear eyes, which is why in that game four Lightning Panthers, we got riled up, not so much because of the calls that were made that were, in fact, penalties, but the calls that were made that probably weren't penalties and were called against the Lightning.
And it's fair. I think you try to. Even though we want the Lightning to win, I think we do a pretty good job of being objective.
You got to call it like you see it. So, look, the Jordan Staal penalty, the first penalty that led to a Lightning power play, which that was the best of the first three that they had, which I talked about, I did not think that was a penalty on Jordan Staal. However, Brady Shea got away with a high stick, which was not called.
Who, by the way, went to the penalty box.
Yeah, he knew he high-sticked Kucherov,
but the
officials missed it.
Yeah, right.
And I actually felt Warren Fogle should have gotten either the only penalty or an extra two right off the center ice faceoff.
Which was so bad. Do you remember calling a game where that's happened?
No, never.
That was just incredible.
I was surprised that they allowed the teams to change players because nothing had happened,
right?
I mean, I guess if there was one penalty, you could change to start the power play. But they were allowed to change players for the 4-on-4. But it was clear that Fogle was kind of the initiator of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was Sutherland or was it Pakmara, the other referee. I can't remember which one issued the warning. But the warning seemed to be directed at Fogle. And then the second one was the penalty. But he sent both guys off. So, look, I could it have been 4-on-4? Sure. Could they have called an extra penalty on Fogle? Yes, they could have, and they chose not to. And they clearly missed a high stick on Brady Shea. The Staal penalty, whatever it was, I have my game sheet here. They called hooking on Staal at 11:36 of the first. I did not think that was a penalty. The other five were penalties. They were penalties. So
the one that really should fire Brenda Moore up, and it was such a selfish play. I'm really stunned a player like this would commit something like that, and I'm talking about the one from Svechnikov with about 53 seconds remaining in the second period, where he punches Yanni Gourde in the head for no reason. Yanni Gourde isn't going anywhere. He's pinned up against the boards. There's a couple of players around him. And Svechnikov, I understand the emotions are high.
But your team has just been scorched for Correct. Two power play goals against.
Correct. So like I said, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes, and the only thing I can come up with is he's being really selfish, and it's almost, I don't want to say a fake toughness, but it's almost like he let playoff hockey and how physical it is go overboard. All you have to do is make a check.
But it's strange that Carolina did that, because they have not played that way through the series.
Right, that's why. He lost his mind.
Three of their six penalties leading to Lightning power plays came in the offensive zone. We talked about that with Kucherov.
Well, that's a good point, overtime. Too. Yeah, that's a good point,
offensive zone penalties, 200 feet from your net. Two of the penalties were hits to the head. I mean, I guess I saw a quote that Brindamore said, I didn't like the Martinook penalty. Now, I don't have context there. I don't know if he's saying I didn't like the Martinook penalty, like I didn't think it was a penalty.
Right.
I didn't like the fact that they called it. Or I didn't like the Martinook penalty.
Martinook should know better. Yeah, I didn't like
I'm not sure which it was. That's a penalty. He hit Ruta in the head. They called boarding. It really wasn't boarding. But there is a two-minute minor for hitting the opponent in the head. That's a penalty. That was a penalty. The Svechnikov hook in the first period denied a scoring chance for Braden Point. That's actually a good penalty to take.
Yeah.
But that's definitely a penalty. And the Svechnikov trip on Point, that was the one at the beginning of the second period. Like, that's one that's called. You trip a guy when he has possession of the puck, it's going to get called. We saw a penalty called on Savard
for
much the same type of play.
And Carolina dodged a bullet there a bit. Because if you remember, as I know you do, Dave, Tampa Bay had to start with their second power play unit.
That's what I was just talking about.
Yeah, right. And so they just didn't have their big guns to go.
Didn't even have Palat on it.
Right.
But anyway, Svechnikov took that penalty. And then there was the Jake Bean penalty. And I saw a little bit of rumbling about the Bean penalty.
The hooking,
a penalty.
Yeah.
And who drew the penalty? Barkley Goodrow. Again. This guy has had fingerprints all over positive stuff for the Lightning from the minute he came into the playoffs in game six. I cannot say enough about the playoff he is having. So it's 4-2. And remember when Braden Point scored in game three, Lightning had allowed a breakaway goal to Aho, and they drew a penalty on the very next shift, and Point scored shortly thereafter.
Right.
Kind of the same thing happened here. I mean, it wasn't on the next shift. But the Hurricanes did not have a two-goal lead very long in either game that they had a lead, game three and game four. Goodrow spins on Bean in the neutral zone, and Bean impedes his progress. He impedes his progress because he knows it's going to be a two-on-one. That's a penalty. It is a penalty. Bean got beaten in the neutral zone and made a desperation move to prevent a potential rush chance against. That is going to get called, I shouldn't say 7 days a week, but because sometimes plays aren't called. But other than the Jordan Staal penalty, show me one of these other infractions that was not, in fact, a penalty on Carolina.
Well,
in addition to the fact that they missed the one on Shea, and they probably could have given Fogle one at the beginning of the game.
But see, this now, is where...
But let me just finish
one other thing.
I know Carolina was upset because on the play that you referenced with Svechnikov hitting Gourde in the head, Sergachev cross-checked Aho. He did. He did cross-check Aho. But that came after the hit to the head on Gourde. Could they have given each player a two there? Yeah, they could have. But they also could have done the same thing at the start of the game on the Fogle play.
Correct.
And the Svechnikov hit to the head of Gourde was far worse than the Sergachev cross-check in the back of Aho.
It was a more flagrant
penalty.
I just don't understand what Svechnikov, who is not known for being very physical, and I understand that's not a reason not to be physical in the playoffs, but what are you trying to accomplish there? I'm going to go back to Gourde is no threat there. There are a number of players along the boards. He's not going to make a play from there. And you decide to take a run – at his head. Like, if I'm Rod Brind'Amour and, you know, Svechnikov already had taken two penalties before that, I'm sitting there going, son, if you weren't producing offensively in this series like you have, you would be on the bench and you may be a healthy scratch the next game. And that may happen.
That was his third penalty
of
the game already.
It's devastating. Like, if it was probably any other player of lesser pedigree or who had not made an impact offensively like Svechnikov has had in this series, then maybe you sit here and you say, I'm going to have to sit you, son, because what you're doing, it's not helping our team. And so, Dave, getting back real quick to the penalties that you just mentioned, five out of the six we think were legitimate.
And there were others that they missed.
This is where officiating does matter. Because if you call the game the way you're supposed to, I'm not going to tell you you're going to come up with six penalties. But, Dave, look how that benefited the Lightning. And they don't have to apologize for that. The officials called penalties, and we thought, for the most part, five out of the six, at least on the ones they called, they got right.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if they only called two out of those six?
Well, and I don't know.
Or one out of the six.
Yeah, like, I'm not watching the game with an eagle eye, particularly as the power play started to become more and more lopsided on potential calls on the Lightning that weren't made. I know the Sergachev play bothered Carolina. And look, I'll say that's fair. That's fair that they're upset about that. But the Svechnikov play happened before Sergachev cross-checked Aho, so the officials looking at that. And like I said, the two hits that happened, one right after the other, the Carolina hit on Gord was worse. So they're not happy with that. Fair enough. And that was a big power play because Stamkos scored the goal to make it 5-4. But I'm not sure that I noticed, and I'm coming at this honestly, like, I didn't notice. Maybe they were there and I just didn't notice, but I didn't notice a bunch of non-calls on the Lightning throughout the game where you'd be like, boy, the Lightning got away with one there. Lightning dodged a bullet there, no penalty. Like, I didn't see that throughout the game. So maybe Carolina did, and maybe that's why they're upset that they only got two power play chances.
They're probably
themselves.
Upset with it because you never see a power play discrepancy as much as we did in game four. I mean, Dave, and this is where the officiating sets themselves up for failure most of the time. How many times do you see that many penalties called in a playoff game of that magnitude in one period?
Well, game four of the Lightning Panthers series.
Yeah, but I mean, it's unusual, I guess is what I'm saying. And then when you see Tampa Bay at the end of the game, how many power plays they had and what Carolina had, Carolina's probably thinking, this is just weird. This is different. Okay, maybe we did commit those penalties, but you're telling me we only could get to the power play twice? So I'm not absolving, you know, Carolina for what they did. I'm just saying the NHL, this is a bigger issue that we've talked about. Call a penalty. And if that means another team gets on the power play eight times in a game and another team only goes two because you didn't find anything, then so be it. Don't officiate based off of where the game is, based off of what a penalty is. And I think that would alleviate a lot of issues the officials have in this game. But be that as it may, this game came down to a period of time in the second period where Carolina played well enough to get a two-goal lead and imploded in 5 minutes and allowed the Lightning to take a lead. And, Dave, we have seen them after two periods. What is that famous record they have combining the regular season and the postseason?
32-1 now.
32-1.
But they locked it down in the third period. The third period of game
four
looked like the third period of game two.
And, Dave, for everybody that has problems at times with Tampa Bay defending, they haven't had a problem defending the lead after two periods this year. And they showed that. They proved that in the third period. And so I personally, I know you don't make the predictions, I will, and I may be wrong. By the way, kudos to you. I'm surprised we didn't get to this before. You said Kucherov's going to have a big game.
And yes, boy, my one kind of prediction.
He was
I said I wouldn't
phenomenal.
Be surprised based on what happened
phenomenal.
At the end of game three. Yeah.
He was phenomenal. And you know what? You also talked about, too, and we both touched on a little bit in the last broadcast, that we saw some things in game three in terms of other guys starting to get some chances outside of the big guns, and I think that was positive. Look, Tyler Johnson gets a goal off a really good play by Ross Colton, and even though it was deflected, Johnson, maybe that gets him going, but that was important to get that goal to tie things up at four apiece. So you need your big guns, and we've talked about that, and that's why Tampa Bay is typically the favorite going into most series, is because their star players are typically better than the other star players for the opposing team. But also, too, the role players have done enough in this series to allow the Lightning to get a 3-1 lead. But I think when we look back, I think the Lightning are going to close this out tomorrow night. That remains to be seen. I think there are some interesting questions about who Rod Brind'Amour should go to net in Game 5. My hunch tells me it's Mrazek, because I think, you know, look, he was in net for the lone win. I think he's played pretty well, although Chief will tell you when the Lightning started to go up a little bit more in that Game 4, they had more success. If you think the Kucherov goal is one he needed to stop, and maybe that's a complaint, or the deflection from far out.
And
maybe
that was
needs,
a big goal, the 6-4
that
goal.
That was a huge goal.
Yeah.
It was a huge goal.
Well, Brind'Amour, just so you know, he just got done with his media availability.
What did he say, Steve?
So no decision yet on the starting goalie, but Nedeljkovic was in the starter's net at practice today.
Okay. So maybe they go back to the kid.
Did he say anything about Niederreiter, who practiced today?
He said he looked good. It was the first practice back. We'll see tomorrow. He also said Trocheck will try tomorrow as well, but no decision.
Well,
that's
all
a loss
hands
too.
On deck for Carolina.
Yeah, that's a loss. I mean, those two guys, look, injuries are part of it. Niederreiter and Trocheck.
They're both on their second line. How would the Lightning look if you took out their second line center and their second line left winger?
For sure.
Take Sorelli and Killorn out of the Lightning's lineup.
And Trocheck is a stud when he's healthy. There's no doubt. So, look, that we understand that. And injuries are part of this. Lightning have dealt with injuries for sure, and they've kind of overcome them. But Carolina, I think when you throw those two injuries into the mix, Dave, and then, again, it's not so much that Nedeljkovic and Mrazek aren't good goaltenders. It's that you're having a conversation about who is your goaltender.
Yeah, I know.
For Game 5.
That has been
an issue with me.
A lot of airtime during the series.
Well, you know what? But Dave, it's a simple point, but it's the biggest one, is that, you know, we're trying to talk about these series between Tampa Bay, Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina, and we're talking about lines, and, you know, Aho line is really good, and we're talking about how the forecheck for Carolina can be really good, but the one elephant in the room in both of these series has been no questions in net for Tampa Bay and lots of questions in net for the opposing teams Tampa Bay has played so far through the first two rounds. And honestly, when you look at the teams right now who may be favored in their respective series, or at least giving themselves a chance, you know, Colorado, Las Vegas, certainly being that, you have a legitimate number one guy. I mean, you just do. And again, that's why I said at the beginning, like, when Carolina reevaluates this series, if they end up losing it, and look, we could be a far, you know, ways off from that, but I think it's going to end tomorrow. Go get yourself a number one goaltender where you're not having these questions in the playoffs about, well, you know, we're not going to make a decision on our goaltender right now. That's insane. That is insane. And look, you have to work with what you have. So I'm not blaming Rod Brind'Amour. I'm not blaming Joel Quenneville. You can only play the guys your GM gives you, or who your scouting department goes out and scouts and who you sign. But if I don't have a guy who I can sit there and say, you know what, even in a bad game, I'm bouncing back with him the next game because he's that guy, I've got a problem as an organization, and it doesn't speak well in a 7-game series against the defending Stanley Cup champs, who have the best goaltender in the game, to upset them. So go out and find a number one goaltender. Easier said than done. And if you can't find one, go draft and develop one. And that's, you know, to me, that's, boy, is it real? Does it really stick out? I think more so than maybe any other playoff series I've seen covering this Lightning team. This notion that you can go back and forth and think you're going to pull off an upset against the defending Stanley Cup champs. Maybe you do. Maybe you do, but I don't see it happening, Dave. I don't see it happening. It sounded like Brindamore wanted to go back to Nedeljkovic, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, he certainly, from a puck handling standpoint, can help, but I didn't see enough of that in his starts that made me think that was a difference. It could be, Dave, but I didn't see enough of that skill set to make me sit here and say that's why I need to play him in game five. Like I said, Mrazek got you the lone win so far in this series. I'd be
inclined.
And was
very, very good in that game.
Yeah, and I know he's hot and cold. I know Chief has said, look, when he's really good, he's really good. But when he's off, he's really off. I mean,
he wasn't really off on Saturday. I think you can probably put at least accountability, some of the accountability on two of the goals on him. The one where he bobbled the rebound on point shot, where Stamkos scored.
Yeah.
That's one where he needs to stop that and cover it up. Because also, you know that your penalty killers are scrambling to try and get back in position. And probably the sixth goal. I mean, we talk about the quick release from Kucherov, and that thing had some hair on its back, right? I mean, that thing was moving quickly, but it still did go through him. I'm not sure if you can look at the other four goals and say it's on him. I mean, he was screened on the Kucherov power play goal. That's a shot to the top of the net where Sorelli's standing right in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, he said no play on the Stamkos goal to make it 5-4. He had no play on the Braden Point goal in the first period.
There have been instances in this series where Carolina's goaltenders have had no chance.
Johnson's goal nicks off Hamilton's stick and goes bar down. I mean, what's he supposed to do with that?
But they've also allowed a couple of goals, or at least one goal, that they should have stopped that's been the difference in this series. And that's been, again, we talked about at the beginning of the show, the margin of error is so small.
Yes, it is.
That's something that you have to figure out. And so Carolina, in my opinion, is just not there yet to win a championship with this type of goaltending. Even though it may be very good, it needs to be excellent against the defending Stanley Cup champs with the best goaltender on the planet on the other end. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to some questions too at Bolts Radio. Don't forget, coming up after our broadcast here, we've got the Lightning and Flames back in 0-4, Dave. Game 7, the radio call. I mean, that is some good times right there. If you're a Lightning fan, you can listen to this broadcast, then listen to that call, and really get you in the mindset, the mood for Tuesday night's Game 5. But we'll take a break. We'll come back, take more of your tweets at Bolts Radio. Back after this on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Glad you're with us, and you are participating, which we love, at Bolts Radio. I'm Greg Linnelli, along with Dave Mishkin. And Dave, one of the questions we asked about Kucherov right now being the best player, best offensive player in the game today, based off of what we've seen in the playoffs, understanding you have multiple players that you can put in that category and discuss. I love these Twitter names that we get who respond. Busta Beak. How about that, Dave? Busta Beak.
He reached out earlier this year, didn't he?
I think he
did. He has a very memorable handle.
He said, Kucherov is the best. Yeah, when you put him with Pointer, the two are remarkable playmakers. Hard to separate them in the conversation about Kucherov being best offensive player. They're like beer and peanuts, yeah? To which I said, no, they're more like milk and cookies. And he laughed.
We're a but G-rated show here.
We are a G-rated show. There's no question, I think. I have made the case. I thought, and I still think, Braden Point's their most important forward. But, you know, specifically we asked offensive player. I think Kucherov just... Dave, I actually think his shot might be just as dangerous as his passing. But they're both elite, aren't they? And that's rare to find in today's game. A guy who's a playmaker, but also who can be an elite goal scorer, too, with his shot.
This matchup of the top line against the top line has been a really interesting one through the series. Phil said on the air he was a little surprised that when the Lightning had last changed, they didn't put Gord's line out against Aho's line. But Brindamore wanted Aho's line against Point's line for games 1 and 2, and the Lightning were like, okay, we're good with that for games 3 and 4. And what's been interesting is that there have been points where the Aho line is a really carried play going head-to-head against points line. Even if they haven't necessarily gotten rewarded, although they have gotten rewarded as well, they were plus two in game three. Points line was minus two, of course. Point and company were out for the two power play goals, but those don't count in terms of plus minus. And that continued into game four, and there were points when the Hurricanes were surging in the second period when, for sure, points line was having trouble against Aho's line. But at the end of the day, you look at the point totals, and I know the Lightning have done a lot of damage in the power play, but points line has outproduced the Aho line in the series. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about predictions, which you make a lot more of them than I do. I remember earlier in the series when we were saying, well, is points line going to get going? And I thought that they had a fairly quiet first two games, although they were a little bit more dangerous in game two than they were in game one. And you said, I think at some point in the series, we're going to have a game where this line teams up for like 3 goals and 6 points. I'm looking at the box score. Kucherov had 2 points, had one. That's 3 goals. And Point had 1 assist. Kucherov had 1 assist, and Palat had 2 assists, right?
Yeah.
So that's 3 goals and 7 points.
They wanted to one-up
yourself short there.
They wanted to one-up us, but
yeah.
And
but you were right, and some of that is on the power play for
sure.
Yeah,
and they spell.
But
they've done
their work, even strength too. Points first period goal, even strength goal. Kucherov's third period goal, even strength goal.
And Dave, this may speak to the injuries, but the Aho line I think has been phenomenal. I think Jordan Staal has been really good. And again, injuries have played a part in this. The Canes haven't gotten enough from their depth.
But here's the thing, Greg. In game four, at least when they were rolling, like think about what they squandered. Not only did they squander a 4-2 lead, they squandered a game where they put 4 pucks past Vasilevskiy.
Yeah.
But they also squandered a game where they did get depth production.
Well, they got a couple goals from defensemen. Yeah.
And right. on the ice was the Foss line when Foss scored. And on Slavin's goal, they had their fourth line.
Yeah, that
might
have been the exception. That might have been the exception. But you can say, but, and it was kind of.
But
like
you're
in the
right.
Third, but
as
in
a
the
whole,
third period, they had nothing.
As a whole, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where you need your elite to find ways. And look, I have said, I thought Carolina, when we talked about Tampa Bay's division, was the one team that made me the most uncomfortable. I think we saw through those 14 minutes in the second period of game four why I felt that way. But I have to give credit to Florida. They were able to sustain it longer, at least right now, at least right now. And I think it's one of the reasons we have seen the Lightning pull ahead here a bit. Connor asks, I asked Eric about trophies this year for third round winners. He responded that they were not awarding out the Prince of Wales or the Campbell trophies this season. Do we know if there will be any type of trophy for the third round winners? It would be weird to have nothing.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
I hadn't
thought about that at all. They're not even calling it the conference finals. They're just calling
semifinals. Just semifinals, right. Just semifinals.
We know the brackets are set, though.
Yes.
That the Colorado-Vegas winner will get Montreal or Winnipeg. What a turnaround in those two series. Maybe not a turnaround for Montreal, but they are a team that plays really well with the lead because they defend so well. We saw that in the bubble last year. When they are D-ing up, their game is basically D up and frustrate the other team, which works well when you have a lead. They are approaching like franchise record territory of most consecutive minutes without trailing. They have not trailed in any game since they lost game four in the Toronto series.
You know what's
incredible? Which has really helped them. And then the Vegas-Colorado. I mean, Vegas has completely turned that series around. Wow. They've completely dominated Colorado since the second period of game two.
You want to know how good Tampa Bay has been over the last couple of years? Two former Lightning players this year have really depicted how deep this team is, and that would be Carter Verhaeghe and Jonathan Marchessault. So Marchessault gets the Hattie last night. We thought Verhaeghe was one of the most dangerous forwards on the ice for both teams in that first round series. And we know Marchessault more of a track record when he left Tampa Bay than Verhaeghe. But Dave, those guys arguably are top six forwards right now. I mean, I think that's fair to say. And they just couldn't find any room playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But I find it interesting that those two guys, Marchessault more so than Verhaeghe because he's done it a little bit longer, really stood out and have stood out in these playoffs. And again, it speaks to how good Tampa Bay is. I want to get into this, Dave, tomorrow a little bit as we break down Game 5. You mentioned Barkley Goodrow. I think there can be a case that's made that Barkley Goodrow almost needs to be a must resign for this team, more so than Blake Coleman. We can talk about that tomorrow. That's how good he's been.
Why did Carolina go 0 for 2 in the power play in Game 4? A big reason was the duo of Goodrow and Coleman. They were outstanding on those two penalty kills.
But when we say, like, you know, guys play hard and they're hard to play against, both of those guys come to the forefront. But Goodrow adds that extra element of size and really just nastiness. And plus, he can handle himself, as we know. There's a reason why I think we're starting to see why Tampa Bay had to give up what they had to give up to get him. But, Dave, that's been worth it and some. And I'm curious to see if they're going to be able to resign him. I don't think they'll be able to resign both. If they do, great. But Gritter is almost one of those guys. I kind of loathe spending a ton of money on your bottom six, particularly in the salary cap era, because I think it's hard to do. It's hard to stay competitive and sign your top guys when you have to sign your bottom six to contracts that might be tough to justify over the years. Goodrow might be the exception for me. Michael, lastly here, Dave, what's up, fellas? Just had a question. What is with Kelly Sutherland? Why does he hate the Lightning so much? Love the show. Keep going.
Well, I don't know that he hated the Lightning. Carolina would not say that Kelly Sutherland hated the Lightning after the Game 4 that we saw on Saturday. You know, quick shameless plug here.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I don't know if the fans are aware of the Quest for the Cup series, which I watched last year. I thought they did a great job with it. It's behind the scenes stuff. And of course, the Lightning went all the way. So why wouldn't we watch these episodes? There are 6 episodes. The NHL, in conjunction with ESPN, I think, produces it. They've done it for several years now. So episode 1 dropped on Friday, and I just watched it over the weekend. And so they featured 2 games in the second round, and one of the games was Game 2 of Lightning Hurricanes. And the shameless plug part was the play-by-play that they used was basically our radio call, which I'm like, way to go, Steve. I don't know if you had anything to do with that, but and they used a lot of it too in terms of, like, not just goals or saves. I mean, they just had plays throughout the game where they were finding the right segments. So I was impressed that they were able to find all of that, and I gave a mental thank you slash congratulations, good work, Steve, to make all of that available.
Nice job, Steve.
I have no idea how they do it, but they did it. I don't know why they didn't use the Carolina feed at all. They didn't, but be that as it may.
Why would they?
But the other game that they showed was Game 1 Colorado-Vegas, which was that brouhaha, right? 7-1 Colorado. Reeves gets suspended. There's a 9-minute power play. Guess who one of the referees was?
Oh, boy.
Kelly Sutherland.
Come on.
Yeah, but you hear him talking to the players, and, like, he's making sense. Like, he, you know, I don't know if it was him or the other guy, but, like, when Reeves does his thing, he's like, Reeves, you're gone. Get him out of here. Like, they just basically got him off the ice as quickly as possible. So, look, it's not an easy job. I don't think referees have a bias. At least I don't believe they have a bias. If they do, shame on them. I think it's a tough job. I think there have been some games in this playoff year that have been tough for referees. You have held them to an exacting standard, Greg. Or, like, that's their job. They need to get these games under control. And I'm like, in a way, I feel badly that Kelly Sutherland has happened to be the referee for a lot of these games where emotions have bubbled over. And, you know, 2 of them certainly have been blowouts, right? The Lightning Panther game 4 was a blowout, and the Colorado Vegas game 1 was a blowout. But, you know, hearing him converse, he had a good conversation with Marchessault that they showed in this episode. It's like, all right, well, like, he's being reasonable, and, you know, he's explaining what he's doing and all of that. But, yeah, he has not made a lot of friends among fan bases,
no.
I think, this playoff year.
Well, tomorrow we'll be at it again, noon to 1. Don't forget, coming up after our broadcast here, we've got Game 7 from 04. So check that out with that game call. We've got game calls everywhere. And, of course, tomorrow's game is at 6:30, and we'll start with the coverage leading into it at 5:30. But Dave and I will be on the airwaves noon to 1 yet again. Thanks, Dave. Great job as always, bud.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, that's Dave Michigan. Thanks to Steve Hurstick. I am Greg Linnelli. It's Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.